Emily Hornback.
I don't need to speak, thank you.
Okay. Peggy Tibbetts.
Okay, my name is Peggy Tibbetts. My husband, Todd, and I live in Silt. My daughter, Emma, and her two children, our grandchildren, live in Westminster, so we're especially appreciate the adoption of the standards on the Front Range last fall. And I am here to urge you to strengthen the air pollution standards for oil and gas operations statewide. While I applaud the adoption of those stronger health safeguards against oil and gas air pollution for the Front Range, it's important to remember that all Coloradans deserve to benefit from those strong protections. The standards should apply statewide and protect the health of West Slope residents too. And before I tell you this next part of my testimony, my husband and I live probably about a mile from the nearest oil and gas well. However, in 2014, I suffered from recurring upper respiratory infections and bacterial infections in my intestines. My urine was tested by Dr. Greg Dooley at CSU, and the results were positive for ethylbenzene, toluene, xylene, and styrene. My daughter and granddaughter also tested positive for the same substances. Subsequently, my immune system failed. I continued to struggle with chronic bacterial infections because my immune system is no longer fully functioning. I'm also in treatment for neurological damage caused by exposure to toluene. And all of this has been confirmed by a toxicologist. Last year, researchers at the Endocrine Disruption Exchange in Paonia evaluated 48 studies that sampled air near sites of oil and gas operations, as was just testified by Kim. And this is an excerpt from that study. They identified, quote, they identified 106 chemicals detected in two or more studies, ethane, benzene, and N-pentane. Several polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and mercury. Another study, which was released in March, that was led by the Colorado School of Public Health, which some of you have already heard about as well, shows hazardous air pollution levels measured along the Northern French Range exceed levels that could affect health. Researchers used ambient air samples to estimate and compare risks for four residential scenarios. They found the lifetime cancer risk of those living within 500 feet of a well was 8 times higher than the EPA's upper level risk threshold. And that study is called Ambient Non-Methane Hydrocarbon Levels Along Colorado's Northern Front Range, Acute and Chronic Health Risks. The common denominator, which is important for you to understand, in both of these studies is chemical exposure due to air pollution caused by emissions from oil and gas operations. So not from water, not from, you know, working at the facilities, just in our air. Nothing is more vital to our health and our economy than clean air. We all deserve to breathe clean air, which you've heard before today, whether it's fugitive emissions from the Uinta Basin in Utah or the San Juan Basin in the Four Corners region or our own Piceance Basin, we continue to be plagued with ozone pollution on the western slope of Colorado. Even though drilling has declined in the past 2 years, there are ongoing drilling projects in Battlement Mesa, Mam Creek, as well as Mesa County and Rio Blanco County, which you also heard about today, along with new drilling and fracking. Unloading processes still occur as regular maintenance at the existing producing wells emitting tons of methane and chemicals. There are processing plants, compressor stations, tank farms, pipeline transfer stations, pipelines, and instances of flaring. All these sites and facilities constantly emit methane and other fugitive chemical emissions. Reducing hydrocarbon emissions places no additional regulatory burden on the oil and gas industry. Capturing emissions is cost-effective for operators. Finding fixing leaks is regular maintenance already required by the state. On average, Garfield County is meeting national ambient air quality standards, but all it takes is one air inversion to shroud us in the brown cloud and remind us of the tons of hydrocarbon pollutions we are exposed to daily. According to the American Lung Association, close to 7,000 children and adults in Garfield County suffer from respiratory ailments. That's 12% of the population compared to 8.4% statewide. And I think with your help, we can do better. Finally, I remind you that when this commission adopted methane emissions regulations in 2014, those rules applied to the oil and gas industry statewide. In order to protect the health of all Coloradans, please adopt these strong ozone standards statewide. Thank you so much.
Arn McConey.
You're ending at 5. Try to get some.
Thereabouts.
Okay.
They'll lock us in here, but.
That's fine. That's good. My name's Arn Menconi. I live in Carbondale. I'm a father of an 11 and 13-year-old. I'm also a former Eagle County Commissioner, and I'm running for U.S. Congress in the 3rd District CD. Because we might run out of time, I'd just like to show a hand. How many people are here in support of stronger statewide standards? Please raise your hand. And as John had pointed out, I'll just speak from a format of a former county commissioner, it's unusual to find this many people fill a room at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the middle of the week. And so that must mean to me that there is a very, very strong support for expanding these standards. And there's a precedent because they've been placed in the front range. And I ran for U.S. Senate, and one of the number one issues that I found running statewide is the fracking issue and the air quality and the water quality and all of the things that come along with this. So what I listen to when I hear this conversation from experts, scientists, from people who are living around near close by who are having health issues demonstrated is, why are we waiting until January of 2020 in order to institute something when it was my role to worry about public health and safety? This is clearly a public health and safety issue. As it was pointed out earlier, today is the one-year anniversary of the Firestone fire, and Anadarko had to close down 3,000 wells after that. And if you look at what was reported shortly thereafter, the amount of money that is used in order to essentially be the watchdog on these type of agencies were being dwindled down because of the severance tax that's used to collect the monies in order to enforce these type of regulations. So I know this isn't necessarily all that you're looking for, but there's a domino effect here. The domino effect is you have air and water quality standards that you'll probably hear from people in the industry say, well, we're already at these standards. Great. Then institutionalize it and make it feel like we're actually having some safety, and then make sure that it's funded so that it could be watchdog and make sure that it's that there isn't discrepancies that are going on. And then the other thing, too, that you learn in these type of incidences is that, to a certain extent, it's a cost of doing business to some of these oil and gas companies to go ahead and tie these type of regulation charges against them up in court and paying whatever fines there would be. So those are some of the, well, I'll call the bigger picture issues. For me, as you know, I've been driving back and forth to Fruita for something like 20 years, mountain biking. And I ran a national charity for disadvantaged youth, and kids were not getting outside, and we were trying to get them more and more into the outdoors. I taught snowboarding, don't hold it against me, for almost 20 years. And I can still string together a few sentences. But the thing that going back and forth and loving Colorado and playing in the outdoors for so much, we're always worried about air quality and water quality. And who wants to be mountain biking and hiking and playing and having their children out there with these kind of risks? I mean, I've learned more in the last hour about real health issues to people that I'm more concerned about than when I walked in here. What is it when I read and hear that oil and gas emits methane, which is the greenhouse gas that's 87 times more powerful than carbon dioxide? I just have to say, I mean, I'm an Italian from the south side of Chicago. I grew up two blocks from steel mills. In the middle of the winter, the soot was on the snow when you went to make a snowball or a snowman. There were regulations that were put in place so I could take my family. Fact that the factories are all gone, but there were standards put in place that cleaned up the lakes, that cleaned up the rivers, that cleaned up the airs. This, I don't understand why we're still having this conversation in 2018, when we know through these type of the type of information that's coming out that this is now 87 times more potent than carbon dioxide by the oil, by the coal burning plants. So I'm for setbacks. I'm for expanding these statewide standards, and I'm very, very concerned that with the Trump administration and what we're seeing Scott Pruitt do and Secretary Zink put in place, that they're going to continue lowering the standards faster and faster, and the people on the western slope are going to have greater and greater concerns. I'd like to just say that I appreciate that you've come here. I've been through a few studies, Blue Ribbon Commission standards. I've been through statewide SWASI for water and all of this. I think this needs to be accelerated, and these standards need to be put in place immediately. Thank you.
Clemens Kopp.
I'm Clem Cope. I'm a 50-year resident of Garfield County. I served as chairman of the Colorado Air Quality Control Commission for 11 years in the 1980s. Then we were concerned about a couple of things. One was called oxygenated fuel, and the other was particulates. In the more civilian language, it was the brown cloud in Denver. That brown cloud was somewhat ameliorated by new car standards over a period of time when the old cars would drop out of the fleet. I'm also a member of the board of directors of Holy Cross Energy, and I'm not authorized to speak for them, but I think I can tell you two things about the company that are public knowledge. One is it's very committed to renewable energy and the reduction of greenhouse gases. And those two things are technically quite a bit different. Another thing that Holy Cross does is something called the Vessel Project in Paonia, and it captures coal mine methane emissions and turns them into electricity. I wanted to thank the division for coming over here and saving us all a trip to Denver. I made that trip twice a month for 11 years. I would encourage the division to propose standards, statewide standards for gas and oil regulations that are backed, not racked. The difference between those two is best available control technology as opposed to reasonably available control technology. Thank you.
Thank you. Dave Devaney.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Devaney, and I live in Belmont Mesa. And as the chair of the community group Belmont Concerned Citizens, I represent many voices from Belmont Mesa that could not be here today. First, we appreciate this hearing being located near our community and more convenient opportunity to express our views. And we commend the commission or the division efforts to solicit input from as many stakeholders and private citizens as possible. As a community now living with natural gas development within our neighborhoods, we can speak with some experience. In the last 5 to 6 years, our residents have been exposed to increasing levels of natural gas development and the emissions that inevitably happen. While some residents may not seem to notice, many report serious and some severe reactions to industrial emissions near us. Others report that visitors to their homes claim to not feel well when they come to visit and recover miraculously when they leave. Our community has a significant number of the most vulnerable population groups, the very young. And as you saw at Bonnie Smeltzer a little earlier, some more senior citizens. Recent health impact studies have reported increasing evidence that anyone within a half mile of oil and gas development are showing negative health impacts. We recognize and commend Garfield County for their air monitoring program. They have spent significant resources over the years to track the air quality in our county. And more recently, there are requirements that the natural gas operator in our community fund the air monitoring at those sites of well pads within our community. While the county air monitoring reports show that the ambient air quality has been improving over time, coinciding with the slowdown in drilling activity, the residents are also aware that there are times when they are in their backyards or walking on a trail and they experience an unpleasant and unwelcome industrial smell. It seems that there can be a major difference between good ambient air and bad neighborhood air. And since most ambient air samples are a 24-hour average on every sixth day, that might explain the apparent disconnect. Unfortunately, individuals cannot breathe average ambient air. I've read reports that state that the oil and gas industry could manage their operations at a zero emission level today. The only challenge is that it is more expensive. But when, as an industry, they have chosen to operate in and near communities where people live, work, and play, they need to step up their game and do everything possible to eliminate emissions. So we would support the strengthening of air quality standards and being consistent with those mandated on the Front Range. All Colorado residents should be able to breathe clean air no matter where they happen to be. Air is not like water, where you can, if you have concerns about the municipal water supply, you can always buy purified water. No, you can't breathe the air, but you can't breathe the air when you can't breathe the air around you, no matter what might be present in it at the time. Thank you.
That's the end of the listed people I have. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak? I saw 1, 2, and 3.
We can say, like, the staff that we need.
Yeah. The room's still
they're open 24 hours.
My name's David Ludlam. I represent the gentlemen here in the back row, all of them, and many of the people that are here sitting in the crowd today. And I hadn't planned on speaking until I saw the looks on their faces at some of the hyperbole and disparagement levied at what they do for a living. But I think I understand it. I was fortunate enough to have somebody forward me correspondence between the paid staff of some of the NGOs represented today. And at first glance, I shuffled through it, and it was more of the same. But when I took a closer look, I realized that it was disturbingly cynical in terms of the tactics that were discussed in this email thread. One of them, I think, and was clear, was priority one for this meeting wasn't to talk about the share process and some of the technical discussions going on there, but it was to capture the media narrative, to create headlines, to perpetuate some of the messages you're hearing today. The second thing that was apparent to me to execute the strategy that in this email thread was, in order to do it, you have to dehumanize an entire sector of our community. The people leaning against the back row here represent probably up to 10,000 people that I represent day to day, counting their families and the children. I guarantee I know each and every one of these people. I've worked with them for 10 years, and they care just as much about the environment, their community, and the well-being of Colorado and Western Colorado as anybody in this room, and I'll stand by that. The other thing I think we have to do to execute the strategy that I read in this email thread was to use cognitive dissonance to separate yourself from the fundamental reason that our companies exist in the first place. I think the gentleman here, who had to leave early apparently, characterized what the people in this room who work on this do as, I think he said, we kill people and we do it for profit. And I think that's a direct quote. You know, the people in this room exist for a fundamental purpose that's beyond profits. They exist because everything in the room is made from the products they produce. Every granular of fertilizer in the entire planet is made from the natural gas we produce right up the road. Many of the facilities, including the one we're in today, many in Carbondale, thousands on the Western Slope that work for economic diversification in the form of parks, rec centers, public places and spaces are funded by the ad valorem tax and the severance tax and the hard work that these people do every single day. We had the energy minister of Lithuania come to Grand Junction a few years ago, and he said, our country has been occupied more than any other place in Europe over the centuries. And we believe that what is in the ground in Western Colorado is part of the key to liberating us from the grip that Russia has had on us for so long. A few months ago, we had the energy minister of Japan, or Japan's energy ministry, come to Grand Junction and say, for us, energy is a question of existential survival of our country. We believe firmly that what you have can make the world a safer place, a better place. It can make our air cleaner in Asia. I think these are the type of things that our folks wake up every day and think about. They're good people. I think they deserve better than some of the rhetoric and some of the hyperbole and some of the characterizations that have been levied at them today and in the email thread that I was privileged to read from some of the groups that organized today's meeting. Now, I say all that to not minimize the very real concerns and the very real impacts that that people have experienced from industry when things have not been done right. And we have an obligation to this state, to this community, to always get better, to be transparent, to use technologies that reduce our impacts, just like we've been doing. To me, one of the painful ironies of the discussion tonight isn't necessarily what the headlines are going to read tomorrow, what's going to be in those stories. It's that today, when Garfield County released even more information about just how robust their science is and how this is the best the air quality's been in a long, long time, and it gets better all the time, and some of the best science in the United States when it comes to a local government. I don't think any other local government has that kind of science at their fingertips. That's a tool for us to be constructive, and it's something to celebrate. Even in the places where industry is most intense in Garfield County, the air quality has gotten progressively better. And if you believe the science that Garfield County has invested millions and millions of dollars to create, it's irrefutable. I'm representing the people in the room who didn't have a voice up to this point. I think that they're good people with good intentions. We plan to take this process very seriously. We plan to bring forth to bear the best technologies that are available, just like IRSA has done, and just like many in the room have done, but are too humble to talk about it because it's just what they do every day. It's not something that they wake up and aspire to. It's just who they are. I hope that my comments are about as relevant as some of the others we've heard tonight. Again, my name is David Ludlam. I represent the natural gas industry. And I'm happy to have any conversation with anyone who might take exception to some of the things I've said this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. That may all be true, but we still need clean air.
Agreed.
Yes.
And water.
Tough act to follow with David Ludlam. My name is Dwayne Knudsen. Thank you again for coming here. I'm the environmental manager for IRSA, the company you hear a lot about. I live in Battle Mesa. So I think subject to some of the other folks' comments here, I actually live there. I have three children that attend the public schools in Battle Mesa, ranging from the CFL up to the high school. And I have a stay-at-home wife as well, living in Battle Mesa there. I can tell you that if I had concerns with our air quality in Battle Mesa, I wouldn't subject my family and my young children to those concerns. I wouldn't do that. I'm not that kind of guy. As I mentioned, I do manage IHRSA's AIR program. So I think I kind of have a little bit of a unique insight being both a resident and an employee of the industry. Colorado, we have some of the most stringent air regulations in the country. Chris, you mentioned just before we opened up, in 14 you guys adopted the changes, the reg changes. Those became effective January 1, 2015, and that was a game changer. That was a big, big, big deal, and that changed oil and gas, how we operate, how we inspect, how we manage our equipment. It was a big change. That was just 3 short years ago. Those were effective just barely over 3 years ago, and we're already looking to add even more regulations on top of rules that were barely effective 3 years ago. So is it really time to consider just adding more rules to an industry that's already really regulated? So what I would like to see, the ask I have, is just a comprehensive review. Again, we're talking about the CDPHE rules here, but there's other agencies that regulate air as well. Are those considered when you guys are looking at this emission reduction program? If they're not, I would ask that they would be. And not just the other agencies, but also the conditions of approval. As several people mentioned, IHRSA has lots of conditions of approval. We're right in Battle Mesa, and we have the most conditioned operations, I think that for sure the county has ever seen. We've seen the most conditions that have ever been applied to oil and gas operations, and it's effective. As the air manager for IHRSA, you know, we go way above and beyond with what the rules are. Okay, we have a first attempt of repair. If we do find an issue, is within 5 days. We don't wait till day 5. If we ever do find something, we're on it like the next day, because I live there too. Right, this affects me too. So just be aware of that stuff. WESOP, we're unique. As was mentioned before, the air quality is getting better. So when you guys are looking at this emission reduction, take the county's specific data you have, the data we have an abundance of, into consideration. That has to be. One-size-fits-all rule is just not the appropriate course. It needs to be maybe a regional specific, but you need to look at the data you have for the counties, because we have ample amount of data, and it does show that things are getting very good. So thank you for your time. Thank you for coming.
My name is Don Simpson. I'm Senior Vice President at IHRSA Operating Company. Right before coming here, I said, boy, conversion, pollution, let's Google that, see what comes up. The top 15 cities came up. 10 of those were not in oil and gas producing areas at all. All of them were in areas where there was either a valley or a mountain where it trapped it. All of them had, of course, automobile and transportation. I think that's something we really need to look at, and I think that's one of the major contributors. Just on a personal level, I'd like to challenge anybody in this room to say that, you know, oil and gas people aren't concerned and don't about the air quality and aren't exposed to it. My dad began his career after college in the oil and gas industry. I was born in a hospital, lived and grew up and went to school in the middle of a large oil and gas field in Louisiana. My dad felt it was safe, but it was a long time ago. After undergraduate school, I was fortunate to work in the oil and gas industry that delivers energy for our great country. A few years later, when I had kids of my own, I purchased property in Texas, built a house, drilled a water well for drinking water, and raised my family near an old oil field. I also felt it safe for my family. Currently, my son, a middle school principal, with my precious two twin grandkids, live and go to school in the middle of one of the largest gas fields in Texas. All of these fields have produced since the early 1900s and are still producing today. During my entire life, myself and 3 generations of my family, 5 if you include my mom and my granddad, have lived in or near oil and gas producing fields, experiencing no ill effects. I currently live on the Front Range. And I do see inversion like other places, but I think a lot of it's transportation. That's one of the things I think we should really look at. In addition, I've been in the oil and gas industry over 35 years, working in 12 states and 20 different countries. Some people scoff at Colorado being one of the most regulated oil and gas states, but from experience, I can assure you it's true. IRSA fosters the use of evolving technologies as a part of our commitments to planning safe operations as we strive to produce the energy we need in an environmentally responsible manner. Currently, we funded $100,000 for the Garfield County air quality study, which was done by CSU. We provided $105,000 to the county for new equipment and monitoring, air monitoring around our facilities. We volunteered our facilities for the CSU study. It's an open book. We want to make, air is important to us also. It's not just important to some people that think that they're afraid that there's something bad out there. We can always make improvements, that said. So we use investments in new technology, LDAR, drones, Dragonfly, and we voluntarily started compliance in 2015 ahead of new, or in 2014 ahead of some of the new air regulations. I just want to thank everybody and thank the, I think everybody should have an opportunity to talk. We do our best, especially in Battlement Mesa, when we're in and above, around community. Average age, although contrary to someone said tonight, is in the 2010 census was 37 in Battlement Mesa. A lot of them are made up of oil and gas folks that David Ludlam mentioned earlier that are standing along the wall. We take it seriously, and we appreciate everything CDPHE does.
My name's Rick Rolls. A lot of you know me here. I live 5 miles up the hill. Okay, I've got 19 wells on the place, and yeah, we own the mineral rights. I've got 140 of them within a mile of my house. Now, I came into the stakeholders meeting and listened to it, and y'all were talking about emissions from separators, emissions from tanks, emissions from wellheads. Didn't talk about emissions from pits. Now, I call the pits nowadays, I guess I'd call it passive evaporation, because anytime you have a pit lined with a black liner with black water in it, which is highly flammable, it evaporates. Okay? Now, back 2003 to 2005, I had 3 pits around my house, so I can't tell you how many were on the mesa doing active evaporation. Now, I call that when they put up a sprinkler system, spray it 70, 80 feet in the air, and it drifts all over the mesa. The last time that was done, though, was 2012 and 13, when the Greenback water recovery system couldn't come in attainment for release of their water. So they evaped it 100 feet in the air. I've got pictures of it drifting a mile and a half across the mesa right in my house again. Now, usually, my name's Rick Rolls. Literally, I am a walking, talking, pardon my language, freaking condensate tank. All the chemicals that's in those tanks is in my blood. Now, this happened from that evap. Now, I started having trouble with my livestock back in 97, mares slipping, colts, stillborns with my goats, various cancers, everything from their udder to their uterus to lymph nodes. Pretty much lost them all. Then 2004, now I want you all to imagine this for a minute. Every muscle in your body contracted at the same time. Think about that. You can't move. You can't reach your face to eat. You can't walk. You can't drive. You can't do anything. 2 weeks soaking in a bathtub twice a day with Epsom salts and baking soda, I finally was able to drive. And I went up, and y'all probably don't believe in acupuncture or homeopathic or any of that, but that's the only person Western medicine told me they couldn't figure out what's wrong. But my acupuncturist, in 30 minutes, found out I was poisoned with gas. She didn't know it was airborne or liquid, but to get toxicology done. Well, if you can imagine, when you're teed up like that, you kind of can't work, so you get pretty damn broke pretty fast. Well, after 2 weeks of that, like I said, I got to her. 2 weeks later, I got an appointment with my doctor to set up toxicology. They wanted to argue with me, and then finally got them to draw the blood, but they hadn't found a tox lab yet. So I found the tox lab in Richardson, Texas, and I called them. They wouldn't return a call for 5 days. Then when they did return the call, they told me it was too late because the CDPHE had told them that because I did not work in the industry, there's no way I could be contaminated. Now, folks, I don't work in it anymore. I did in the late 70s through the early 80s until it pretty much hit bottom in 83. If you all remember that, those of you who were in the industry then, I worked for Crutches Resources. Okay, now, the deal is, when I got my blood tested, when they told me no, well, I finally got them, argued with them, got them to send for the test kit. They get it back. 6 weeks later, they get my blood back. Now, this whole time, the 4 weeks plus the 2 weeks to get it okay, so for a month and a half, I'm detoxing every day with baking soda and Epsom salts. And I also started doing detox teas. Yogi and traditional medicines makes the best ones, if any of you are involved in that. Or if you work in the industry, you should most likely do this because it'll turn the water about the color of this damn table when you soak in that water. Now, when they got the test back, I have benzene, toluene, xylene, styrene, trethylbenzene, and 6 kinds of trethylmethylbenzene in my blood. Now, by the time I got that back, I was pretty much broke. Livestock's dying off. I can't physically work. I have pretty bad brain damage, so I may wander a little while I'm talking. Sorry about that. Shit happens. Oh, excuse my language. I guess I'd say silt happens, okay? But you really need to look into emissions off pits, because I know they don't do, I don't see the active evaporation anymore, but the passive's out there all the time. Greenback has a pit. Now, these are all within a mile of my house. Greenback has a pit. The Hunter Mesa water treatment, which was originally built by Harrison Western, went online in 2005, November. But Encana tried to tell me that that water that they were evaping from 2003 to 2005 had been through that facility, which hadn't even been built yet. When they put their release point for when they bring the water within attainment is 20 feet off the east end of my property. When they put that release point in, it's an open T off a produced water line that comes all the way from Knuckles Creek down to that supposed water treatment plant that hadn't been built yet. So then when they told me that that was their release point and the water after they treat it in a plant that hadn't been built yet, because they put that in June and July of 2004, okay, I told Martinez at the time, was the person I was talking to at Encana, I told him, this water, that's y'all's terminology, 1813-120, Colorado Revised Statute, cited CRS 1813-120, defines all liquid, which remains liquid, at surface temperatures and pressures, from gas production or wellhead pressures, as drip gasoline. There ain't no stinking water, okay? When I go out to any of that water and light it on fire or it explodes, it isn't water. When I can take 5 gallons of it off one of your trucks or a tank, put it in a freezer for 24 hours. Now, this is old deal. Guys used to do this in the 50s, especially sheep herders. Put it in a freezer for 24 hours. Take it out. Run it through cheesecloth. Set it outside for 24 hours. Put it in your truck and drive it. But you better have another motor waiting because the salt content's so high it's going to eat the rings and the cylinder walls right up in it. Okay, that's what y'all call water. I don't call it water. I would never call it water. Oh, shit. Like I said, I have a little brain problem. But okay, what I told Martinez was, I said, this water you guys call it, it's some amazing stuff, my God. Here from 2003 to now, that shit's been traveling. From 2004, it goes down this pipeline, knows to go past this open T. Now, when I say open T, there's no valves on it to divert it from the T or straight down the line. It's still there, too. It's still their point of release. It comes from those, all those wells over that was to save trucking, you know, keeps the trucks off the road. Comes all the way across, all the way down to the Hunter Mesa compressor plant, which hadn't been built yet. Gets treated. In other words, it travels in time to 2005. Gets treated, and then it comes right back down that same line uphill and dumps itself in the creek, because now it knows instead of going past that open tee down to water treatment, it can dump because it's been treated. It's amazing shit, man. Travels in time, and it's got a brain. Think about it. It goes right past an open tee without dumping. How does it do that? How does it get past that tee? Physically, engineering also, impossible. But that's the line of, pardon me, BS I was given. Okay, so y'all can say that, like Ludlam, Mr. Ludlam there says that all this plastic is made from gas. It can also be made from hemp, soy, and corn. Okay, as far as fertilizer, damn, I use fish emulsion and manure like my family's been doing for, let's see, 6, 7, 8 generations, maybe 20 or 30. Okay, so we don't need stinking natural gas. As far as energy, that little yellow ball, it's over there about now. That little yellow ball, been going since the day the earth was formed. Every one of y'all's wells has solar panels on it to operate your control equipment. But the industry BS, once again, is that it will work. We can't do that. Well, for the price, I don't know exactly what it costs to drill a well these days. I haven't looked into it. When I was doing it, it was $250,000 a day for a drill rig. You know how many solar panels that'll buy? You know how much infrastructure that would put in? We're talking $1 million every 4 days. I'm sorry, I'm going to wrap it up. I hear the problems and then I hear the BS. And when I hear the BS, I get seriously aggravated. Okay, I have absolutely no life because of this crap. I don't care what the royalties pay. What the hell are they worth when you have no quality of life? And one more thing. A few years ago, the local medical clinics sent some information to the CDPHE to look into birth anomalies. That would be brain, spinal, and heart conditions. And they wanted to try to link it to the oil and gas. And CDPHE, I think it only took them 2 whole months. Boy, they took a lot of time on it. Said, no, it couldn't be linked. Well, the problem with that is 99% of insurance will not pay for toxicology. And unless toxicology is done on both the fetus and the mother, you can't link the fact that they even breathe oxygen. Thank you.
One more picture.
I know the meeting's gone long. Thank you so much for coming over. We really appreciate in our industry to make things better. I actually operated the plant that he's talking about, Hunter Mesa, water treatment facility. Oh, Derek Davis with CEO Operating. I had the opportunity to operate the plant. That's where I started 15 years ago, is at the Hunter Mesa Water Treatment Facility. And I want to talk a little bit about that and some of the things we learned. We tried to treat water like natural gas. We tried to separate it and in a three-phase separator, and it didn't work very well. We ended up with a hydrocarbon out on the pond, and I think everybody knows that who was in the business, and it wasn't the state regulations, and so we, as an industry, they worked at improving it. And a couple years later, we ended up, they hired a guy that named Chris Durant. He was a water engineer. And what he did is he said, you need to treat this more like a sewer wastewater stuff. And so then they began to put in a dissolved air flotation, and they'd run the water through, and they put a coagulant, a polymer in it, and they'd be able to float the solids to the top, and we could skim those off in an enclosed environment because there was obviously flashing coming off of that, but it was all done in tanks. It was all done responsibly. My guys operated that. My guys were right there. I was right there. I operated those things. And none of us had any ill effects. And one of the things that the reason I want to point this out is because I think everybody responds differently to their environment around them. I'm not going to say that he didn't get affected by what was going on. But what I will say is that we had a problem, an absolute problem with oil on the pond. It was we had trucks there and we were skimming it. This was 15 years ago. That is not what happens today. We operate, my company operates 6 different water facilities. Of those water facilities, we are below 50 parts per million on average. We have to be. We are below that. And we tell the state, the companies tell the state, well, this is what we will be within. This is our compliance measures. And then we hold ourselves to that standard. The state doesn't come and sample our water. No, we do that, and we send it in, and then we give them the reports. And we are self-governing to make sure that we stay within the compliance of the standard that we said we would meet, and then they said, okay, well, we'll go ahead and do that. That is just one example, and I'm sure there's many more. My specialty is in water. That's what I've mostly done. I've done a little bit of compressor operating stuff, but mostly water. And what I have seen in the last 15 years is phenomenal with how much money these companies have put in to making sure that no hydrocarbons go out on that pond. I promise you, if you could light that stuff with a lighter, we'd have torched those ponds a long time ago. And we would have torched our guys that work in there. That would be an unsafe environment. It would be no good for us. And it would put liability on our head. And quite frankly, I wouldn't want to work there. Who wants to work in a place where you can explode? That would be horrible and just awful. So what I want to say is that as we make these standards and we use real science, that we're going to comply to it. Because we as an industry, we want to do what's responsible. I live here in Rifle, Colorado. I have 6 kids. They all go to the school here. My daughter's going to enter a high school next year. She's my oldest. And my youngest is still toddling around. And I have twins that are 6 years old. I do not want anything negative to happen to my children. And I love them so very much. But when we want to look at the world as a larger picture, talk about looking at a larger picture, we are operating under the most strict standards in the nation as far as air quality goes already. If we continue to make it harder and harder for these producers here, they will put their money in other places with lower standards. And so if you guys are so concerned about the negative impacts on the environment, continue to make it harder and harder and put the industry out of business here, they'll go to other countries where there's no standards. And if you think air floats across from one place to the other, I think maybe you should do a gut check and say, where do we want natural gas produced? Where do we want oil produced? And we want it produced where we can manage it and make sure it's done correctly. And our state has done an excellent job in making sure that it is managed correctly. We do not want that oil and gas being produced in third world countries with no oversight. That would be horrible. And it would be horrible for the citizens of that company, of those countries. Because if you do not treat this water correctly, absolutely, there is benzene entrenched in it, there is methane, all these things are in the water. But we treat that correctly here, and just like we want to treat the air correctly, because we live here. I hunt, I fish, and I walk. I went on a hike this morning right through the middle of Rifle, like I want to breathe bad air. So that's what I would ask. I would ask that as we make these rules, because we all know in the industry the rules are going to continue to come, and they're going to continue as our technologies improve. We want to do what's right by the community, but at the same time, let's back it up with science, and let's not put undue regulations on an industry in an area to make it so that all of a sudden we're pushing that out to other areas that will not produce in a responsible manner. Thank you for your time.
And I want to thank everyone for coming again. I think now it is 5:30. It's probably a good time to call it an evening. I think we've had a lot of great comments. Took very detailed notes on everything you said. I absolutely appreciate the comments, and we will use this as we develop the strategies that we will take forward to continue reducing air emissions across the entire state. This is a statewide emission reduction process, so I absolutely appreciate your concerns about applying rules here and protecting air quality throughout the state.
Thank you.